This is The Morning Magazine for May 9th of 2022. I'm your host, Ariana Proctor. Thank you for joining us on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, it's been 10 years since the city of Denver implemented an urban camping ban, and anti-poverty activists are organizing a week of events to call for a reversal. And the CityCast Denver crew looks at the Mile High City's trash problem and efforts to incentivize recycling and composting. At the bottom of the hour, we'll hear the BBC headlines and then the Hightower Lowdown, followed by Storytellers of Color. Host Rosana Longo-Better speaks with Gustavo Melada, a local poet and Spanish professor at Front Range Community College. Melada, who won the Distinguished Book of Poetry in the Dominican Republic, and his poems have been translated in many literary journals. Then, at 9 a.m., we'll bring you Counterspin, a look at fairness and accuracy in reporting. After that, Greg Schultz will be in the Boulder studio for the Morning Sound Alternative. All that is still ahead this morning, but first these headlines with KGNU's Chiara DiMare.
The Colorado legislature is moving into the final scheduled week of the session and flurry of bills that are in the final stages. SB22-172 is a bill establishing the Colorado Rural Healthcare Workforce Initiative with a goal to expand the number of healthcare professionals in Colorado's rural or frontier counties. As part of the initiative, schools can create a rural healthcare higher education track. Another bill, SB22-023, prevents law enforcement from lying to minors in order to get confessions. After that, there's a bill to loosen liquor regulations that could allow some grocery stores to sell beer and wine. Colorado State Senate voted in support of tightening regulations on fentanyl. The bill, HB-221326, will make it to where anyone found to be in possession of 1 to 4 grams could face felony charges as long as prosecutors could prove they were aware that their drugs contained fentanyl. However, after an 18-17 vote on Tuesday, the law now states that the felony possession charge written into the bill could apply to anyone possessing 1 gram of fentanyl, whether or not they had a clue their drug was laced. An amendment to keep the felony possession law in statute indefinitely was shot down, and as of now it stands, the felony will be repealed automatically in 2025. On June 30th, the state treasurer is set to transfer $25 million from the general fund to the Industrial and Manufacturing Operations Clean Air Grant Program Cash Fund. This features multiple sections to move towards cleaner air. Part of the bill features a diesel truck emissions reduction grant program, which incentivizes diesel truck owners to swap out polluting vehicles in favor of newer, more environmentally friendly models. Another part goes towards an electric bus program. Section 2 creates the Community Access to Electric Bike Grant Program. The office awards grant money to local governments and nonprofit organizations that administer a bike share or ownership program for the provision of electric bicycles in a community. This will also create community access to an electric bike rebate program. This will help provide individuals in low to moderate income households or bicycle shops that sell electric bicycles to program participants at discounted prices, rebates for purchases of electric bikes and equipment used for commuting purposes. Students who belong to any of the 574 federally recognized Indigenous nations and meet Colorado's residency requirements won't have to pay for tuition at Metropolitan State University of Denver starting this fall. On Saturday, it was announced that federal, state, and institutional grants will help cover the cost. MSU is the second school in Colorado to create a scholarship program for the Indigenous students. According to the Denverite, university leaders hope the scholarship will attract more Indigenous students, but they also emphasize that resources must go beyond financial assistance, like increased student support services. Denver City Council may ban concealed carry of firearms on city property. KGNU's Jimmy Searfoss has more.
Denver parks and city buildings may soon be firearm-free if a measure proposed by city officials passes later this month. The proposal, which is on tonight's City Council meeting agenda, calls for a firearm ban on grounds owned or partially owned by the City of Denver. This comes with a $999 fine for those caught with one. Places like post offices, schools, and federal buildings already prohibit firearms. This measure mainly focuses on parks. This comes after a fatal shooting of a recognized community member in La Alma, Lincoln Park, in West Denver late last month. Denver officials like the assistant city attorney have said they feel this would make city-owned places safer. and protect those from the risks of firearms. Those in opposition to the bill feel as if it is in violation of the Second Amendment of the Constitution. Denver city officials will discuss the bill at a reading tonight. For KGNU, I'm Jimmy Searfoss.
Yesterday, the Colorado Senate voted in favor of House Bill 1287. The final vote, 20-14, passed the bill to help protect families that live in mobile home parks. It has a focus of regulating health and safety precautions, relocation assistance, and helping them exercise their right to buy property. According to a press release, this bill will help the removal of lot rent stabilization provision that would have made limited lot rent increases to once a year, tied to the local consumer price index, or 3%, whichever was greater, and the downgrade of opportunity to purchase rules, so residents allowing only 120 days rather than 180 days to form an association and arrange financing to buy for sale park. Today is going to be sunny in the high of 60s and low 70s with a high of 75. Outside the studio, it's 46 degrees. For KGNU, I'm Kiara Damari.
Listening to the Morning Magazine on KGNU. I'm your host, Ariana Proctor. 10 years ago this week, the Denver City Council passed a ban on unauthorized urban camping. The law disproportionately targets people who sleep outside and do not have a home to go to. In the decades since the start of the ban, housing costs in the Denver metro area have skyrocketed. Anti-poverty and housing rights activists are organizing a week of action that kicked off yesterday. Joining me now are two organizers. Therese Howard, founded and organized with Denver Homeless Out Loud for 9 years, fighting for the rights of houseless people together with houseless people in the legislature, in the courts, and on the streets. She's now started a new organization called House Keys Action Network Denver, or HAND, which organizes to fight for housing for all, as driven by the priorities of houseless people. V. Reeves. V started their trajectory in houseless justice doing street outreach 3 years ago at the early start of the pandemic, where they also first met Therese. V then continued on to work for Safe Outdoor Space, then Colorado Safe Parking Initiative, as the case manager for Jefferson County. They are now back in the streets performing outreach work alongside Therese at HAND. Good morning, and thank you both for coming on the program today.
Thanks for having us.
So can you start off by giving us an overview of your week of action? What types of events are you hosting and what do you hope to accomplish?
So we're really trying to highlight the different organizations and also the community members, where they're showing up already, the kinds of community spaces that are created. And we're using this to collect stories, to have speakers who are unhoused speak for themselves. We have three different events specifically where folks will be leading that conversation. And then beyond that, we have a lot of community gathering, a lot of community support and remorse for the deadly effects of the camping ban enforcement. And so we're hoping that this is a chance to change the spotlight to the narratives of people's stories and trauma from this and focus it back on the city's responsibilities and accountability.
Awesome. Thank you. So let's go to the data. What have been the cumulative impacts of 10 years of camping bans and sweeps, both in terms of number and in societal effects?
So one key point to start out with here is that over the last 10 years of camping ban enforcement, there have been over 27,000 houseless individuals contacted because of the urban camping ban, told to move on under threat of arrest. Over 27,000 houseless individuals. So that's the kind of numbers we're talking about. The city will say, oh, we don't criminalize homelessness. We don't, you know, ticket people. We don't arrest people. Therefore, we're not actually criminalizing with this law. You know, it's just a tool to connect people to services. The data shows very clearly differently. This is coming straight from the police data itself. It shows that contacts with the camping ban specifically are happening daily. That they happen across our city, and that they happen with threat of arrest not with an offer of keys to an apartment. The number of folks who are actually connected to some sort of actually useful service, much less housing, through the camping ban is negligible. The police department doesn't even track it because it's not something that happens. Instead, folks are actually disconnected from those services and resources by being pushed around the city, unable to find case managers, unable to make it to appointments, losing property, losing sleep, and on and on and on. So basically we're looking at a continued enforcement throughout the whole 10 years that looks different at different times. Currently, the city is shifting a lot of energy towards sweeps. So these regular sweeps are happening 3 times a week. And all of that together is this collective effect of pushing people around to nowhere.
What concrete measures would you like to see implemented, and how open are lawmakers to those steps?
Two concrete measures I can name right off. One is get rid of this unduly law. Get it gone. No more law. We do not need a camping ban. It is not effective. It is harmful. It is destroying our community, harming people's lives, putting people in risk of death, actually leading to death. This law needs to go, number one. And that's as simple as just saying we repeal this law. Together with that, in that same package, we need to protect our rights. Folks who have no choice but to survive outside need to have basic rights to protect themselves from the elements, to share food, to sleep in public space, to sleep in your vehicle, all of these things that are all put in this package of trying to use criminalization, using police and jails as our response to homelessness instead of housing. And then secondly, is housing. The answer is very straightforward. It is that people deserve and want housing. We need that housing to be attainable for all people, not just rich people. And that is not happening in our city or our nation right now. And so our local, our state, and our federal governments need to step up to the plate. This is public infrastructure, public responsibility to have housing that's attainable.
Awesome. And then the last question I had for you today in regards to the extreme numbers that we have with this problem, why do you think that policymakers have gravitated more towards criminalization rather than harm reduction?
We live in a country that prioritizes using money from people on death and weaponizing our nation and our country, our city, rather than supporting people's lives. It's a shame that we're using this idea of individual responsibility instead of accountability when it comes to the simple fact that this is a widespread issue. This is not exclusionary. It's not just a small group of people who deserve this. This is happening to more and more people. We had tens of millions of people across the nation who became houseless during the pandemic. And so it really is the responsibility of the city to step up and protect its citizens.
Awesome. Thank you so much. My guests today have been Therese Howard and V. Reeves of House Keys Action Network Denver. Thanks to both of you for your time this morning.
Thanks for having us. And thanks. Everybody should come to the events all week. Check out the House Keys Action Network Denver Facebook page or Instagram to see the list of events.
Yes.
Thank you.
All right. Take care.
Regular Morning Magazine listeners know we've kicked off a reporting initiative to follow the waste coming out of Boulder County. But what about the city and county of Denver? Frankly, it's bad. Denver's diversion rate, the amount of waste diverted from landfills to recycling and composting, is a paltry 26%. So how did Denver get so far behind when it comes to trash? CityCast Denver host Bree Davies sat down with Denver City Councilman Jolan Clark to hear why he wants Denverites to start paying for our trash.
Time to talk some trash about how bad Denver is at composting and recycling.
Oh, we're really bad. Really, really bad.
Why are we so bad?
I don't know. This is when I disconnect that has shocked people since before I was on city council, when I was working with the Greenway Foundation, people expect us to be really good, right? People think that this is Denver is about the environment and it's green, and we are just terrible. I mean, we're getting shown up by everybody. Loveland, Colorado is like triple the diversion rate of what we are.
So we don't really know why. We have some bad habits, I would say.
We have some bad habits. And, you know, I think we do know why. We have a system that was set up where all the incentive is for you to do the wrong thing and none of the incentive is for you to do the right thing. And so I think we do know exactly why we're bad at it.
And what do you mean by that? Like, what's the incentive issue that we're having as consumers?
To back up just a bit, if you take 100% of what we're taking, and right now we're just talking about the residential trash collection, so the trash collection that is what's picked up by the city as a hauler, only 25% of that has to end up in the landfill because we don't currently have the technology or the right sorting facility to recycle or compost that. So that's the bar of where we could be given the technology that we have today at our recycle center and our compost facilities. 25% landfill, 25% recycling, 50% compost. But it's flipped, right? We only divert 26% of our total waste stream from the landfill. 74% of it just gets buried, creating methane for thousands of years. So if you look at our systems, we come by every week and we pick up your trash. You have to call and sign up for compost. That's 50% of our waste stream. You have to call, sign up for it, pay a fee for it, right? And our recycling is only every other week. So the signal that we're sending is, hey, recycling is only half as important as trash, even though 25%, 25%, they are equal. So people are doing exactly what our system is set up to do.
Fair.
So we send out these flashy mailers and say, hey, you should recycle and you should compost and we want to, you know, save the environment, and it's irresponsible to take these materials that could be reused and recycled again and again and throw them in the landfill. Do this. But then what we're actually telling people when it comes to their behavior is trash is going to come every week. We have three different size bins, but you can pick whatever bin you want and it doesn't cost you anything. Compost costs a fee and recycling only gets picked up every other week.
So I have to say, anecdotally, I'm one of those nerds that does the city compost.
So am I.
Which I love. I love it because it's taken care of, right? I've done the home compost before. It's kind of a huge process. There's certain things you can and can't put in there. But with the city one, it's a little bit more, it's a wider variety of things that you can put into your compost. And then the other thing is, I love the recycle, but I hear you in that it's picked up every other week. And honestly, sometimes, Councilman Clark, my recycle ends up in the trash because my recycle is so full that I can't fit it all into the recycle bin. And so I see what you're saying now is like, we could do better, but it's kind of hard to do better. But that kind of gets to my next question, which is the crux of this thing, which is you want folks to start paying for trash, right?
Yeah, so that's the idea, right? Is we're going to get rid of the fee for compost, the thing that's 50% of our waste stream, the thing that is, you know, the gold standard. We shouldn't be throwing organics away in the landfill where they create methane when we can be turning them back into compost and getting them back out, you know, into our gardens and onto our farms. So that part, that fee goes away, right? So that now that's free and every single citizen in the city gets that. And you're right, that compost is super easy to use. And you can throw all kinds of stuff in there that you can't backyard compost. So we capture even more stuff and it's a no-brainer, right? Once you figure out, okay, which things, if it used to be living, it goes in here, then it's super easy. And then you are not the only person who has that problem where your recycling bin gets full and then it's going to be another week before they come and you end up putting material that could be recycled, aluminum infinitely, right? These great materials in the trash because there's nowhere else to put them. So we're going to bump the recycling up to weekly, and then we have three different size trash cans. And so people will be asked to pay based on how much they want to send to the landfill. The thing that we don't want people doing is where we're attaching the fee. And so there is a built-in disincentive from just throwing things away. It's free to compost it. It's free to recycle it. We'll pick both of those up every week. And then you can save money if you do a good job with that. If every household does what we know is possible and gets 75% diverted from that landfill, you don't need a big trash bin and you'll save money by not having it.
So have you looked at other cities that have implemented the kind of program that you're looking at?
Yeah. So we're one of the last cities to convert our system from this to a volume-based or a pay based on what you send to the landfill system. That looks a lot of different ways. Again, we're a little unique in that we haul our own. So not every city does that, but almost every city has moved to some sort of volume-based pricing system where you pay based on how much you send to the landfill and you get all three carts based on in that area, what the recycling infrastructure is, what the compost infrastructure is in terms of what can they actually, what do they have facilities for to divert. And, even here in Denver, where we talk about that last 25%, I got to tour a diaper recycling plant. Like there are places where they can get 96%, 98% of their waste out of the landfill because there is technology out there. It's not necessarily here in Denver, but that's another thing that we can look at down the road as we get our diversion up is that 25% is not just things that have to go away forever. It's things that we don't have the technology and infrastructure here to do better on. And so, I think this is just the tip of the iceberg on how much better we can do when it comes to waste and diversion in our city.
So we have a lot of listeners who are renters. We have folks that live in apartment buildings and other places where, for instance, recycle is definitely a tough thing to come by and compost is almost impossible. Would this new program address that ability for folks who live in multifamily spaces to also participate in these programs?
So renters, if they rent in single family homes or anything up to 7 units, that's who the city hauls for. So it's anyone who the city is your hauler. So anyone renting or owning in a complex that is over 8 units, they're not on the city. And this proposal right here would not, but they're different pieces, right? Because we haul this. So we are making rules and program changes for us as a hauler. Once we do that, now we have this hauler license program, we can do what other cities have done and say, hey, if you're going to haul anything in the city, you also need to have a 3-bin system. You also need to move to this. But it's really hard to do that when we're saying, hey, we're one of the biggest haulers in Denver, and we don't do that.
Trash is a multi-pronged problem. It's not just if we implement recycling and compost, everybody will do it. It's different for everywhere. Like my mom lives in a condo in Wash Park and she's an owner and she also doesn't have access to those things. But again, also I'm a person that put on events for a long time. The options, it's expensive. It's difficult to implement. It's hard to get folks on board. So we have to address it from all sides. So I like that you're saying if we start here with the city, we can create this model and then we can apply it to other aspects of our lives throughout the city.
Right. And it also drives that infrastructure investment, right? We own the landfill, but as we adapt and aren't throwing as much away, that might also open up the opportunity for us to create, end markets and the circular economy where you're using that land instead of just burying trash. And we've got people out there who are taking the glass and turning them into beer bottles for all the places that are bottling here and are taking the wood and turning them into pallets that are used here. There was a company that proposed taking the drink pouches and turning it into fire-resistant drywall. So there are lots of really cool things that also, when you really look holistically at the problem, it's not just about recycling those things, but then we don't want to be putting those things, on vehicles to ship them around the world to get them reused. We want to create those end markets right here in Denver so that we're taking that stuff and we're reusing it as locally as possible, taking the carbon footprint out of that. And so that's part of it is we need to get to this critical mass where we're capturing enough of these materials that we can then place some of these really cool, innovative end markets right here and turn those materials right around where, from the time you throw it in the recycle bin, it gets sorted at the MRF, it goes and it's turned into something that you're then using again at the grocery store or at the store is a short period of time. And it hasn't traveled around the world to do that. It's just traveled around the Denver metro area. That, I think that's really where we're headed. And there are all these little steps along the way that get us to that.
Councilman Jolan Clark, thank you so much.
Thank you. I'm excited that you're excited about it's always fun to run into another nerd with a green card. So
I'm a real trash freak.
I love it.
You You just heard an excerpt from CityCast Denver, the local Denver daily news podcast. Learn more about subscribing to the podcast at denver.citycast.fm or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. I've been your host, Ariana Proctor. Special thanks to Kiara DeMare, Jimmy Searfoss, Alexis Kenyon, Shannon Young, and the CityCast Denver crew for their contributions to today's program. If you'd like to comment on something you heard on KGNU, you can leave us a voicemail at 303-447-9911. We play the messages back on Tuesdays during the Morning Magazine. Stay tuned for a commentary from Jim Hightower. And then it's Storytellers of Color with KGNU's Rosana Longo-Better. That's just after these news headlines from the BBC.